This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to A Complete History of Manchester United. I'm your host, Wayne Barton, author and producer of several Manchester United books and films, joined as always by Paddy Barclay, the legendary football journalist and writer, author of the definitive biography of Sir Matt Busby. That's the official title. The other biographies is written of Jose Mourinho and Alex Ferguson don't carry the title of definitive biographies, but I can tell you they're definitive. We are taking you on this journey through Old Trafford history. If you're watching the video, please give it a like and subscribe. Join in the conversation in the comment section. If you're listening back on the audio podcast, please be sure to subscribe. Give us a review on the platform you are listening on. Today, Paddy, we are going to be talking about the 1978-1979 season for United. Dave Sexton, he's had a year in charge at the club. He now really needed to kick off in style, more like his team needed to do that as well. You've got no Gordon Hill. He's been sold. Gordon McQueen and Joe Jordan have come in, and they actually score in the first two games for United, wins over West Brom and Leeds, but then there's no win in the first five league, in the next five league games. In fact, there's two embarrassing defeats at home to Bristol City and then 5-1 at Birmingham. It's a really rocky start to the season. Obviously, by now, the club, or the supporters at least, they knew that they were seeing a very different United side to what they'd seen previously under Tommy Docherty. Sexton was hoping that they'd get a really strong start to this second season, and it just... You wouldn't say that he was running away from him, because in football terms, I mean, that might be the case these days. After a manager's got 12 months in charge, they might say something like that. It was still too early in the process to say that for sure, wasn't it? But it was troubling, to say the least.
Yes, and it was difficult to explain if you looked at the quality on the pitch. I mean, the signings of McQueen and Jordan the previous year had been... Well, they were no-brainers, really. I mean, they were for big fees, but they were good signings. They were backbone signings. You know, the old adage. You know, you need a goalkeeper, centre half, you know, central midfielder, and striker. You know, that backbone was certainly being attended to with good players. That you centre backs, McQueen and Buchan still there. You know, you could Sammy McElroy playing in a more creative midfield role, and sort of still Jimmy Green off up front. You know, enjoying a by now, I suppose he would be well over 30. So sort of an Indian summer, playing as beautifully as ever in most games. So it was difficult, really, to explain those results. Given the investment, Mickey Thomas had come in for Gordon Hill, and while in retrospect, you know, an artist was being replaced by an artist, actually that's not really fair to Mickey Thomas, who's a very good player, but you know, he wasn't Gordon Hill, he was a magician, you know. And so it was It was still a good side. You know, Mickey Thomas, very, very good player. I'm not, you know, it sounds almost as if I'm knocking him, but I'm not. I mean, it was a, you know, everybody wanted him at the time. You know, I think maybe Paisley didn't fancy him, but if Shankly had still been in charge of Liverpool, he would have taken him. Shankly adored Mickey Thomas. And so, yeah, it was difficult to explain those disappointing results, particularly the Birmingham one.
Yeah, then there were the four defeats over Christmas. So they lose against Bolton 3-0 away, and then there's three consecutive home games spread over 6 or 7 weeks because there was no league game in January. They played a couple of FA Cup games, but because
it was a very cold winter, wasn't it? That one.
Yeah. But they lost, and on the pitch as well, United lose 3-0 to Liverpool on Boxing Day. It was a very memorable game to Ron Atkinson's West Brom 5-3. A few days after that, on the 30th of December, renowned
football. Oh, wonderful game of football, that, yeah.
It's one of those that always gets replayed on the big match. The atmosphere was incredible. Brian Greenough, who by now was playing right back, even though he'd been the man of the match at centre-half in the FA Cup final, because of McQueen coming in, a place had to be found for Brian, usually at right back, and he scored this goal from 25 yards on the half volley, but probably the best goal of his career. Although when you talk to him, he got further back every time. The last time I talked to him was a 50-yard volley. But United lost 3-0. Sorry, three consecutive games, 3-0 against Liverpool, 5-3 against West Brom, and then 2-0 at home to Arsenal. And really, it was only the cup run at this point that was saving Sexton, because, yes, maybe at the start of the season, it might have seemed like it was too soon, but in the mid-season, the fans were starting to turn against him. The football was so dire. There wasn't a sign that it was going to improve. And this was the age, really, where a cup run could save a manager.
Mm.
And that's what it seemed to be. So United were sort of picking up in the league after the cup form sort of helped them along. You know, at that point, you've got a run of form in the league where Andy Ritchie comes into the side. He's a young striker.
Mm.
And he scores 5 in 6 in the league, including a hat-trick against Leeds. And I really think at that moment in time, I talked to Martin Edwards about this, about, you know, whether how early it was that that Dave would have been looking at, you know, being under pressure. Of course, Louis Edwards was still in charge at this point. So Martin, as you will know, if it wasn't under his governance, he kind of ducks the question and sort of says, well, you know, we felt that there could still be something to be done under Dave. And I guess this mini resurgence in March, thanks to the cup run, probably really saved Dave from the sack at that point, even only sort of 18 months in, because United, as we know, had a good track record for dismissing managers in mid-season, didn't they?
Absolutely, yeah, they did. But I think, yes, there were things. I mean, you know, I just said a moment ago, it's difficult to explain, but when a team is adding up to less than the sum of its parts, you know that there's something wrong behind the scenes. I think Dave was such a well-respected man, I would say, in the game, that people wished him well. But I think there was members of his coaching team, Tommy Kavanagh, Scouser, he divided opinion. And there was also a division of opinion about Dave himself, whether he was right for Manchester United in the way that Doherty had been and to an extent, Ron Atkinson would be. Ron Atkinson, manager of West Bromwich, I think, on that famous day, would have been. So he was, demonstrating his credentials for the succession to Old Trafford, although I'm sure neither he nor any of the crowd knew it. But yes, there was clearly something wrong behind the scenes in terms of the players' relations with Dave and his coaching team.
Yeah, and I think Sammy alluded to it on the previous podcast that we had with him.
Yes.
There was a kind of like an abrasion there with Kavanagh and Sexton. You know, it was sort of contrary to the kind of football that Kavanagh believed in. And even though none of the players will go on record and say that Kavanagh didn't do everything that Sexton asked of him, they could see some of the old enthusiasm wasn't quite the same. And when you lose the enthusiasm and momentum like United had done over that two-year spell, very difficult to regain it. In football, it's one of the hardest things to do. United had this upturn in form in the sort of very early spring, late winter, but then they tailed off as the cup run sort of took its own life in terms of moving forward. The league form really did tail off in United. I think they won two from the last 13, both of those home games, one against Norwich 1-0, one against Wolves 3-2. So both of those goals, both of those games by a single goal, really uninspiring. Finished the season in ninth place in the league, minus three goal difference, 63 goals conceded, which tells you a lot about this team. I mean, 60 goals in 42 scored isn't a great return anyway, but 63, considering that the payoff was supposed to be that United would be more pragmatic, they'd signed players to be a bit more pragmatic, that really wasn't working. But as we've said, it was the strength of the cup, and particularly the FA Cup, Paddy, because, and the FA Cup alone, because there was an embarrassment in the League Cup. They lost to Watford at home.
Yeah.
So everything was pinned on the FA Cup. And even that run wasn't inspiring. I mean, the fixtures, I mean, they win against Chelsea in the third round. A tie against Fulham goes to a replay. They win at Colchester by a single goal. The tie at Spurs goes to a replay, which they get through 2-0 at home. And even then, they get to the semi-final against Liverpool, a rematch from the 77 final. And even that one goes to a replay, even though in this tie in particular, it's a lot more exciting. The first game, the 2-2 game, is a lot more exciting than the final, at least. Greenough decides, Jimmy Greenough decides the replay at Goodison.
Yeah,
actually delivered through the across by Mickey Thomas.
Yes.
Fantastic stooped header from Greenough. And finally, at that last moment in the early April, it starts to look like Sexton's decisions are paying off for once.
Yeah, it does. I mean, that replay against Liverpool that you mentioned, I think it took place at Goodison Park. And it was a wonderful, actually, it was a very good performance. It was a good, very, very good game. But an indication of how well United performed that night was that some of the goalkeeping of Ray Clements was just unbelievable. Better than, I think, really proved why he was, the late Ray was one of the greatest English goalkeepers of all time. He was heroic that night, and yet lost. Yeah, you're quite right. Jimmy Greenough header from a bouncing cross, a sort of Mark Robbins header, you might say. And anyway, that was that. And I think the goal came about 15 minutes from the end. Manchester United really looked like a big club again in that game. And the fact that, Wembley was familiar territory, I think there was... I watched the semi-final replay before we came on air, Wayne, and there was a hell of a noise that night. It was wonderfully atmospheric, and I think that was a sort of a feeling that United had reawoken, and let's see what happens next.
It was a strange one because the first semi-final was at Main Road, and I think Liverpool felt that they had the advantage because they were on United's enemy territory.
Yeah.
And as soon as they got the replay, and it was decided it would be played at Goodison, United had that feeling as well. So strange how those kind of... And I think that was the charm of the FA Cup in those days, when the semi wasn't played at Wembley, that you could have a neutral venue that would throw up a storyline like that, because it really did kind of play into the theme of the games, didn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I remember later in the Ferguson, the early Ferguson years, United winning a semi-final against Oldham at Main Road. And that was, I'm not sure if that was replayed, but it was an absolute classic of a match. Yeah. And of course, the same day, Crystal Palace were beating Liverpool 4-3 in a in a different sort of a game, but an equally great game. I mean, probably the two best semi-finals ever held, to aggregated, together. Yeah. But yeah, you're quite right. There was a lot of charm about playing on your rival's ground. Yeah.
United get to the final. They play against Arsenal. Very difficult performance from United. They don't really show up in the first half of the game. They're 2-0 down. Mm-hmm. And they really, it's a flat performance. You know, they're 2-0 down in, let's just see the time, the goals for that. Let me refresh my memory with it.
Yes, it was Sunderland and Stapleton, I think.
Yeah. And yeah, United, they're really bereft of ideas, and that they're not motivated by Sexton in the dressing room. He does little to sort of say, all right, he doesn't give them a rousing speech in terms of, go out there. And if you look at when you watch the game back, United are fairly unlucky. I mean, it's not like they're particularly brilliant in the in the game, but they're caught out, really, the goals, the timing of the goals, because it's like both of the goals. It's Talbot and Stapleton who scored
before. Talbot, that's right. There was a doubt about whether Sunderland or Talbot had got the first one. It was given to Talbot. They sort of went in together on a rebound. And it was, spoiler alert, the match has a very exciting finish. But it was a dreadful match up to then. It was one of those poor Wembley finals, in my opinion. I remember it being bored stiff. But of course, it's because of the finish. A little bit like the 1999 Champions League final in Barcelona. Yeah. Dreadful match. And yet, it's remembered as a classic because of the finish. This cup final was the same. But anyway, we mustn't spoil the ending.
Well, we can. We're getting there. So the second half, United felt like they not quite sucker punchers, but they were starting to feel their way back into the game, when Arsenal were dominating, and then they were caught on, not necessarily counters, but Arsenal caught them with two goals. And from that moment and in the second half, because Arsenal had a two-goal lead and they were really good at controlling that, United found it very difficult to get back into the game until the 86th minute when Gordon McQueen scores from a set piece. That leaves sort of floodgates opening. And not in the sense that United are bombarding the goal, but there's just an increased panic in the Arsenal defence. And that's the kind of thing that really sets up the goal, which is the equaliser a couple of minutes later. I'm quite generous with Sammy because I know him quite well. And he's the man who scores the equaliser for United in the 88th minute. It's a good solo goal. It goes around a couple of challenges. His slight frame gets him there and pokes it past the Pat Jennings in goal. Jennings with those massive hands of his. He manages to get it past him and into the net.
Don't worry about frothing about that goal, Wayne, because it was a magnificent goal. He actually, he sits David O'Leary down, and bear in mind, David O'Leary is although he's only 21 at the time, he's one of the best central defenders, around in the game. Super wonderful player. And then after doing that, he nutmegs the other one, which I think was Steve Walford.
Yeah.
And that's actually a nutmeg. I mean, that was cheeky. And I would say it's one of the goals that's never really, Wembley goals that's never had as much credit as it deserves. But anyway, perhaps we'll set it in context later or in a wee minute.
Yeah. There's a
good pass by Koppel as well. Good pass for Sammy by Koppel. It was a very good goal. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
No, it wasn't. But it's one of those moments where, first of all, the goal itself, Sammy doesn't really talk about it in terms of it being, one of his greatest. I mean, he's proud to have scored in the final. And if anyone watches it back, it is a lot better than what he gives it credit for. He'll brush it over. Yeah. He's a modest man anyway, but he is a great goal. And, I think he puts a little bit of it down to fortune or element, like the elements sort of going for him. But if you watch it back, I think he controls a lot of those elements himself and deserves all the credit for it. So this is the, I mean, you can blame Dave Sexton's pragmatism, or you can look at the defining moments and the very fine lines that you get in sport. And this was one of those, really, because there are a couple of decisions here. Sammy, one of the things that he blames himself on is that he takes a time celebrating. But what would you do if you just equalised in the FA Cup final when your team was 2-0 down 2 minutes ago? He blamed himself. He says, well, I was celebrating a little bit too much. I took too long. The other element is that Brian Greenough, who'd been a substitute all season, obviously, as we said, man of the match in the previous cup final, he's about to be brought on. He's stripped off, ready to go. But then when it gets to 2-2, Sexton says, no, put your jacket back on. You're not coming on. Now, Brian, when he was alive, he was obviously, I mean, you go over these things in your head, and Brian obviously was of the belief that if you'd have killed the game at that moment and brought him on, killed a few more seconds, then the following wouldn't have happened. Paddy, tell us what the following was.
Well, I wonder if what was in Dave's mind was extra time. You know, which at that moment was destined. It appeared to be destined, but no. I don't know who was voted man of the match that day, but for me it was one of a classic display of Liam Brady brain power. Yeah. He'd been influential on the game before, but never more than now, because they say a team's, you know, vulnerable just after it scored, and this was the classic example of it in terms of Manchester United. Whether Sammy was culpable to a percentage point, I don't know. But United were broken on far too easily. Brady went up the left wing, where Arsenal had actually had a bit of joy earlier in the game. Graham Ricks was overlapping, as so often he did. He hit what turned out to be a brilliant cross. It was way over beyond the far post. It was very hard hit cross, and it went way beyond the far post, completely fooling Gary Bailey, who got under it and was left sort of wafting a hand at thin air as it sailed over his head to the far post, where Alan Sunderland put it in the net for the winner, and that was it. United, you know, elated and then crushed within the, what was it, a minute, something like that. And as I say, great final for neutrals. Great finish to the game, you know, for the country as a whole and for the FA Cup. But really crushing for United, and certainly the last thing that the Sexton regime needed at that time.
Yeah, it's difficult to know, really, when you look back at the game and you see, you know, obviously the pause or the delay in, you know, making that change and not making it at all. Those kind of things, whether you can blame the manager. I think on the balance of things, you look at the last 5 minutes of a game of football and it's as frantic as it was. It's difficult to point the finger at anyone because the game just takes... it just takes shape, and it does, you know, that's the beauty of football, and you sort of like a slave to it, a witness to it, and you know, everyone involved is in that aspect. But one thing that is interesting about Dave Sexton from this is not so much what he did in the match, but what he did after it, because after the game he's involved in the television coverage where they're talking about it. Now, everyone can remember Tommy Docherty. If you've been watching this series or listening to it, you know Tommy Docherty in 1976 said, we're going to come back and we're going to win the final. He was always very brash about, you know, predicting, you know, United are going to come back up and all that sort of stuff. He was so bold and brash with the way that he'd make predictions and the sort of protestations defending his side. Well, Dave Sexton, after the game, basically comes out and says, says everything about him as a person. He says, it's a privilege to be part of such a memorable final.
Uh-huh. This is the problem with Dave, you know, that They say, actually, before I answer that, I made a reference to extra time before. I don't think there was extra time in an initial FA Cup final at that time, was there? I think it was brought in, it was only after a replay, wasn't it?
Yeah, it would have gone to a replay, yeah.
So, yeah. So, please, forget, put that down to forgetfulness. But, yes, Dave was a very nice man. And probably two.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Of the great English coaches of that era and perhaps two of the 10 best English coaches of the century were Dave and Don Howe. They were universally respected. And neither will be remembered as a great manager. And, you know, I think these are two of the guys who, two classic examples of the great coach who doesn't make a great manager. And part of the reason why some great coaches don't make great managers, there are various reasons, but it's sometimes the case that the guy's just too nice. And this, he had the reaction of a sportsman after the game. Now, by saying it was great for the neutrals, that was right and that was good, but that wasn't what his team or Manchester United wanted to hear, and it shouldn't have been his first reaction if you're really cruel about it in judging it after the event. So. I mean, I don't know about you, Wayne, as a Manchester United supporter, I winced when I heard that, and I'm not a Manchester United supporter. What would your reaction have been? You're probably only about 2 years old, eh?
I wasn't born for this one, but obviously I've watched it a few times because
but
of
you've
the
seen it.
Yeah. You know, yeah, because I've obviously worked with all those players and I've watched it every single time I've worked with the players just to make sure that, you know, I'm getting it from their perspective. And every time you come to that Sexton line and he says it, and he's still, I'm not going to say jarring because it's not, but when you look at the bravado of Doherty and you look at the fact that he was brought in almost deliberately because his personality was such a contrast to O'Farrell, understood, because the club had consciously done that. They'd made a decision at that point. And I know that Doherty was very, very different in terms of Busby, because Busby had this sort of charm and charisma, whereas Doherty was a bit Machiavellian rather than charming. You know, it was kind of like you couldn't trust him, whereas Busby, you would trust him, even some people to their fault. But Doherty sort of knew he was a bit of a rogue.
He was cunning and crafty and sly. And I don't think Dave had too much of that in him.
No.
You know, and that may well have been, as I say, why he didn't. I mean, even Busby, I mean, people say, great man and lovely man, which he was in many ways. But he had a calculating side about him as well. And of course, Ferguson did. I don't think Dave had that sort of cunning frame of mind.
No, and I think by this point it was probably fair to say that there was some of the players who were losing that conviction in him to be that way, because, you know, they all loved Doke. That it wasn't, well, they all, with the odd notable exception, players kind of like really, as a squad, they loved Doke. And this isn't about Tommy. We're 2 years removed from him. It's about what Dave was bringing to the role, and even the positive aspects of this pragmatism. You could say it was completely absent in this season, because they'd conceded a lot of goals. And in this moment, you know, obviously the FA Cup, they hadn't started really well there. You know, if you're not inspiring going forward, at least be resolute in defence. And they hadn't been that in the first half. And then the last 10 minutes were almost completely kamikaze, which was not in the Sexton playbook at all. You know, the way that United came back into the game wasn't from a Sexton drill. It was United sort of playing on their own instincts, like muscle memory had kicked in, where sort of the most memorable post-Doherty performances had been the ones where they seemed to resemble that kamikaze. You know, the Porto game where they came back and almost came through to win. That was evoking the spirit of Doherty and not really going with the pragmatic Sexton style. So it was, I think for me, it's more an interesting character study, because this was the one where you look at it and think, no, you can kind of see what United are missing now in terms of that personality in the dugout, and you can see the impact that it has on the team. You know, it's not just a ruse. It's not like a press dig. This is an actual manifestation in there, and it does have an impact to that personality of the manager. It's very clear to see. Mm-hmm. And the commander, obviously the players respected him. They respected him immensely, especially once he'd got, by this point, he was kind of moving out the players like Stuart Pearson and Gordon, all the players who were outspoken against him, or not even outspoken against him, but weren't players of his nature. He was making those moves anyway. And the other players like Martin Buchan and Steve Coppell, the more, you would say, deliberative education, you know, the educated players, they were fond of Sexton. They liked what he was trying to do. They just, I think that to a man, they sort of, even they knew that he wasn't, carry the same kind of charisma as Sexton. But having said that, the fact that they got to the final did nonetheless mean that he was going to be sticking around for a while. He sort of earned a stay of execution to build for the summer, and we'll see how well that goes in the 79-80 season. Let's go through the squad then. First of all, you mentioned Gary Bailey. He's a new name in the series. He was the new goalkeeper. Alex Stepney left. He'd gone to Dallas Tornado. A lot of players making their way over to the NASL for the sort of dying throes of the money spinning over there. And it really was money spinning, because they did not know what they were doing in the league at that point. Allegedly, I'm not casting any aspersions, but it's well documented. This is a Manchester United podcast, not an NASL podcast. You can find all that in documentation elsewhere. But Bailey made an instant impression, more respectable in goal than Paddy Roach. Paddy Roach played 14 league appearances and 16 appearances in total, but Bailey came in, made 37 appearances, 28 of those in the league, played in all the FA Cup ties. He'd offered himself to United on a trial and turned up at the team hotel before a game. Sexton took him on. He was praised for keeping a clean sheet on his debut against Ipswich, but then blamed, and people were wondering if United had got themselves a dud when he let in three at Everton 3 days after that. He was unfortunate. You mentioned the cross, the power of the cross in the final, but for a long time, Bailey did get the stigma attached to him for that. He did, no spoilers, but he does redeem himself in a future final. But he does, he was getting a lot of criticism. But yeah, as you can see by his appearance total, he was definitely a reliable goalkeeper for a long period of time. Yes,
very much so.
Reliable, the buzzword for many of the defenders. Arthur Albiston played 42 appearances, 33 in the league without scoring a goal. Martin Buchan, 48 appearances, 2 goals in the league in 37 games. Stuart Houston recovered from that broken leg and really making a good solid contribution with 25 appearances, 22 in the league. Gordon McQueen, 7 goals from 47 appearances, 6 in 36. And Jimmy Nicol, 29 appearances, no goals, 21 appearances in the league. Steve Patterson, we mentioned him in a previous podcast, makes 3 appearances in the league. Brings us on to the new defenders in the team. The first of those, Tom Connell, a fullback who turned 21 during this season. He makes just 2 league appearances. They're the only 2 appearances that he makes at the club. He's from Northern Ireland. He deputised for Stuart Houston on the left. He played in those Christmas defeats that I mentioned, you know, the Bolton defeat at home. And Liverpool at home. He played as a regular in the reserves, but he was eventually sold under the next manager for a fee of £37,000. Not anything to be sniffed at that time for a reserve player. And Kevin Moran makes 1 single appearance this season, the start of a distinguished career. A Dublin-born player of 2 disciplines, he played Gaelic football and traditional association football. He played for Bohemians as a centre-half in both sports as well. He was spotted by Billy Behan and signed for United in early 1978. Makes his debut against Southampton in April. He was an exceptionally brave defender, an exceptional defender as well by the appearance tally, as you can tell. He should have played a lot more, but he had a lot of injury issues, mainly because he was so brave that he would throw himself into tackles that... perhaps he had no right to win. Often he did win it. Often he came out the worst. And a note on Kevin Paddy, because he was an extremely good defender.
Yes, he was. He was a good defender. Not tall, but decent in the air. He was good enough, actually, to... he played a couple of games in midfield. You know, he was a good sportsman. And very athletic, hard as nails. All sharp elbows and knees, you know.
Yeah.
He was raw, I would say. But yes, he could play. And a very, for such a warrior, you know, he was a sweet sort of lad, you know, very soft-spoken and polite, you know. Nice lad. But but a warrior, you know. He saw sport as combat.
Yeah, he certainly did. But United needed that. They did need some of that steel as well, and they would need it over the forthcoming years. Definite fan favourite at United. The midfielders, Steve Coppell, another byword for consistency, 12 goals in 53 games, 11 in 42, ever present in every single game that season. Brian Greenough, listed as a midfielder this season. Like I said, he played some games in midfield, but mostly at right back. He scored 3 goals in 40 games, 33 of those games in the league. Ashley Grimes, 1 goal in 21 appearances, 16 of those in the league, but 11 of those 21 were as substitute. Lou Macari, now a bona fide midfielder, scored 6 goals in 38 games, 6 in 32 in the league. Wee D. McCreary, David McCreary, 16 appearances, 15 in the league without scoring a goal. Chris McGraw, 2 substitute appearances in the league without scoring a goal. Sammy Mack, his goal in the FA Cup final was 1 of 8. That was 51 appearances, 40 in the league with 5 goals. That brings us on to Tom Sloan, another Northern Irish lad. Sloan had played 40 league games for Ballymena before United signed him in the summer before the season started for a fee of £20,000. He only played 4 games in this season, but he earned 3 caps for his country by the end of the campaign. A decent squad selection for United. 3 starts and a substitute appearance. The other midfielder that United played that season was Mickey Thomas. As you mentioned, he was the replacement for Gordon Hill. He'd already played over 200 times for Wrexham. He was heavily coveted. A fee of £300,000 was needed to sign him for United. His numbers immediately reflective of the difference between him and his predecessor in that number 11 shirt. Mickey Thomas scores just twice in 33 games, just 1 in 25 league appearances. Having said that, I mean, you said it earlier, he was still a fantastic winger. He was just very different. It was like Coppell on the right, on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
That's what...
Yeah, he was wide midfielder, but could cross. You know, sort of, he probably wouldn't have seen himself as a winger. But he fulfilled that function. He gave you balance on the left-hand side, yeah.
Yeah, he was a tremendous worker on the pitch. Nobody would shout doubt his work rate. He did seem to struggle with the confidence issues of the step up, and he's openly talked about that since. But anyone who's met Mickey Thomas, I'm sure you've had the pleasure, Paddy. Yeah. He is such a remarkable, lively character.
He is, what you call it, hyperactive personality, always on the go. Nice lad, good player. I mean, the one thing I would add, he came to United, although he did, he has confessed to sort of finding it difficult to take the step up in class. But of course, if you signed a player from Wrexham now, you'd say, well, Manchester United signed a player from Wrexham. They usually sign them from Ajax or something. Yeah. But in those days, Wrexham had a very, very good team. So he came with European experience. Wrexham, because they won the Welsh Cup every year, they would get lots of... And one year they got to the quarterfinals of the Cup Winners' Cup. Had some very good European experience down at the race course. So he wasn't wet behind the ears when he came to Old Trafford.
No, I've got a very quick story about Mickey, actually. So a few weeks ago, as of recording this podcast, my friend was over from California and we went to see Sammy. Sammy Mack at services, because that's where I would do some of my work with him for the book. And said, my friend was over, he's like, oh, can we meet Sammy? I asked Sammy, he said, yeah, fine, no problem. So we're in this coffee shop in the services, and all of a sudden, Mickey Thomas just walks in the door. And all the things you just said about him, I've been fortunate enough to meet Mickey loads of times. He's always been very pleasant and supportive of my work. But he buzzed over to Sammy, and buzzing is the word. He buzzed over to Sammy. He was like, he was almost like he was in a panic to be there. Like he didn't know why he was supposed to be there. And he goes and he's like, oh, I'm getting a coffee. I'm getting a coffee, Mike. I'm getting a coffee. And he goes over to the coffee and he's like, I just need to go to the shop. I just need to, and he's like all over the place. And then he was like, "What is he doing?" And Sammy was bewildered. I had no idea. But if you have been in the company of Mickey Thomas, that's kind of what he's like. He's just everywhere, and none of it seems to make much sense. But it's always so much fun.
and he does. I don't know. He must be, how old would he be now, Mickey? But I bet he still looks like a wee boy, a little boy. He's a little pixie, isn't he?
And we should say as well, he's fought cancer and beat it at least once. He's,
well done.
He's a magnificent character and very, very inspiring, a good lad. He's so funny because we talked about how he was... I guess intimidated by the stage of Old Trafford, but if you ever met him, he's such an extrovert character that you just wouldn't think it. A great man, a great guy, and had some controversy in his later career. You should pick up a copy of his book. Neither Paddy or I wrote that one, so we can. I can't claim that we're unfairly using our space for advertising. It's a great story. So
I shall definitely look that one up because I haven't read it. Yeah, brilliant.
The forward line then. Okay, so Stuart Pearson makes just two appearances. Both of those were in the FA Cup before. He's really suffering from injury problems. I think it's in the summer that he gets sold to West Ham. Joe Jordan, 10 goals in 37 appearances, just 6 in 30 in the league. Jimmy Greenough, 17 in 44 in all competitions, 11 in 33 in the league. So it really is an Indian summer. Yeah. Remember that Jimmy wasn't really a renowned goal scorer in terms of getting all the numbers. So he really, that is a good number for Jimmy this season.
Yeah.
And finally, although his name's not on the screen, and I'll get a graphic for him next season, Andy Ritchie is introduced into the team this season. 10 goals in 21 appearances.
Yeah.
And in 17 in the league. A really, really good return from
Andy. How many in 17 did you say?
Sorry. 10 in 17.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, I can remember absolutely going crazy about Andy Ritchie when he first came into the team. I thought, he was going to be a fantastic player. The hat trick you mentioned against Leeds, it was spectacular.
Yeah.
And I went completely overboard. And one or two people said, he can shoot, but he hasn't got the pace and the mobility. And probably in the end they were proved right. But what an exciting bow he took on the field. He delighted Old Trafford, particularly that the Leeds game. I'll never forget.
Yeah. Don't worry, Paddy. There's plenty of your writing for other United players that we're introducing to the side that I'll be referencing as the season. Because we're now in the era of Paddy's fantastic writing that I can reference back to. So I'll be making sure to take advantage of that for sure. There was a great write-up for one forward that I'm going to be talking about in the future. I'm sure that you remember me talking to you about it before, but I'm not going to spoil it for listeners now. Let's go on to the tactics then. So this is a 4-4-2. This is a definite 4-4-2, by the way. This isn't the 4-2-4 as seen under Docker. This is a flat four in midfield. Koppel and Thomas work in the wings. And Alberson really now, he's become the first choice at left back. And as you can see, Jimmy Nicol, even though only, you know, playing 21 games, he's the first choice because he's the guy who starts the final. This is effectively the cup final team and the one that Dave Sexton preferred. It's got a lot of physicality at the back with McQueen, and it still has that sort of scampishness in midfield with McElroy and McCrory. But there's a lot more workman-like qualities in that team than you would have said under Tommy Docherty. Still a great side. Everyone loves all of those players. There's not one that, you know, the United fans think, oh, they shouldn't have played for the club. It just didn't quite work it. And maybe it was the direction of the manager. You know, it didn't have that same kind of buzz as it did under the Docherty era. United's colours, they're red, white and black. They, I think it's the first time. No, they're still with Admiral at this point. So that's the red, white and black. And then the very cool away kit, which was white. Admiral and Adidas had been in dispute over this. So originally when United had the kit, it was with four stripes and they had an agreement basically where Adidas, they had the trademark over it. They, you know, they had to amend it to four stripes, but then they reached an agreement so Admiral could have three stripes on it. So that was the agreement. That's how it looks this season. The third kit was like the home shirt, exactly the same, but where it was red, it was blue. A nice number, actually, that one. So that's that United review, as we always show. We've got this one this time round. Different last time, you might remember, Paddy, although it was a time ago since we recorded, but it was a landscape. They moved the format last time. This time it's back to the traditional sort of portrait mode, and there's some great programs from this season. I tried to get a picture of the Christmas one because they were doing the Christmas graphics on. It's really nice design, actually. But you can see there 15p for a program, set you back. I quite like it to be 15p these days, but it's not. Average attendance at Old Trafford is down by 5,000, actually. So maybe the supporters are voting with their feet, Paddy, at 46,164. But it's still a good attendance for the league. Just for United, it's a notable decline considering the 50,000 that it was before. Top scorer, Jimmy Greenough, 17 goals, 11 of those in the league. The key results, really, they had the two wins over City in the league and then the semi-final win over Liverpool, which are the most remembered, but not really a lot to take home from United from this season in terms of good results. Maybe only that Liverpool result, because the ones that are remembered mostly are the FA Cup final, and probably even more than the FA Cup, or just as much as the 5-3 to West Brom, because those two have replayed so much and two very entertaining games. But you know the contrast in the way that United played at the time, because they weren't that entertaining, but they're involved into entertaining games, but just unfortunately for them, defeats, which probably sums up United this time, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. A little bit too open.
Yeah. Elsewhere in football, I'll run past it very quickly. Liverpool won the league title. But a more romantic story, Forest win the League Cup and the European Cup. And I think really it's Forest's success, not so much Liverpool, but because Forest were in the second division with United, there's like, there go, you know what I mean? There's, you know.
Yeah.
They really felt that they could have had that if they'd got the right backing with the players or kept Doherty in charge. So, Forest's success is very romantic, but United kind of wistful, looking at it, thinking, yeah, that could have been us. But it wasn't. it wasn't. Maybe Dave Sexton can deliver a trophy or a league title next time round. We'll be back to find out and look at United's 79-80 season. That's what we'll be looking at. Sexton's third season in charge. Hopefully it'll be much better than the one that we've just reviewed. If you've enjoyed watching the video, please give us a like and subscribe and join in the conversation in the comment section. If you listen back to the audio podcast, please be sure to subscribe and give us a review on the platform you're listening on. We will be back soon to discuss that 79-8.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.